Accession number 18729, Reel 3.
Mrs. Bothwell, Reel 3.
And she slipped my hand and she said, "Right, we're past the American soldiers now. You can go back, I'll be all right." So I said, "Oh, no, you don't." I said, "Mum asked me to take you to the church." But she ran off, and she ran like a gazelle. And for a seven-year-old, I've never seen anybody run so fast. I couldn't keep up with her because, as I mentioned before, I was not very good at running. Plus the fact that the pavements were like ice. You couldn't see the ice, but where the bits of snow that had fallen during the night, and then it had frozen over. So I ran as fast as I could. I couldn't keep up with her, but I thought I'd got her trapped when we got to Trindle Road roundabout. She went up a side street and she had to turn right to come back out by the roundabout. And I thought, "I've got you, girl, I've got you." But as she came up the street, she saw me and she dived across the road to the actual roundabout. And she just missed being knocked over by a car. She turned round and laughed at me. And she carried on round the roundabout, crossed over the road the other side, down the hill. And when she got to the bottom, she had to turn right by the school, down to the church. Well, she just got out of sight round the corner and I heard a yell. And when I got round there, she'd fallen over and she'd cut her knee. And she was worried that she might get blood on her knee. A lady came out of a cottage opposite, saw what had happened, and she took my sister in, washed her knee and bandaged it. I then took her down to the church, took off her coat and hat, put a veil on her head and took her into the church, only to find that she was the only child making her first communion. After the service, we got outside and Mother asked me to take a photograph of her, so I stood her on the lawn in front of the presbytery. And she said, she was crying, she said her knee hurts and she was cold. I said, "Anne," I said, "if you stand up, try and smile. And just stand still, just for a minute, just while I take the photograph. You can then have your coat on and your hat and we'll go home." So I eventually got the photograph and she let me hold her hand until we got halfway home. And we went to cross over the road and she slipped my hand again and she was across the road and up the hill on King Street, and as I got back onto the pavement I slipped over. She stopped, turned round and laughed her head off at me. I painfully picked myself up and I hobbled up after her and she ran it way ahead until she got to the warehouse where the American soldiers were. And two of them were standing outside the door having a sneaky cigarette. They'd been told they were not to go outside the door at all after the riot the previous night. But they were having a sneaky cigarette. And they called across to my sister and said, "What are you doing out so early on a Sunday morning on your own, little girl?" "I've been to church and made my first communion." They looked at each other and said, "Oh, that deserves a present, doesn't it?" So they called her over. And one of them put his hand in his pocket and he pulled out a bar of chocolate. And he gave it to her. And by that time, I was level with her on the other side of the road. So I called across to her and I said, "You come over here, you little madam. Wait till I get hold of you." So she came across the road and she suddenly darted away from me. She had to cross a very narrow road before hitting the road that went down the hill where we lived. And as she crossed over, a bicycle came up and I can't remember whether he was coming towards her. He came up behind her. And as she crossed the road, she knocked the cyclist off his bike. and she stopped dead, totally shocked at what had happened. And I took the opportunity to grab hold of her. And I said to her, "Now look what you've done." I said, "You nearly knocked over that man on the way to church when he came out of that building." I said, "Well, you've managed it this time." So the man got up. I said, "Are you hurt at all?" He said, "Oh, just a bit bruised, a little bit of shock." But he turned to my sister and he told her off. And he said, "You want to take care, young lady? Watch where you're going, and before you cross the road, stop and look both ways." Anyway, we walked down the hill, and as we got near our road, she said, "You can let me go now. I'll go straight home." I said, "I'm not letting you go until we get indoors." And I kept hold of her tight. Anyway, we got indoors, and Mother was in the kitchen, just inside the back door. She took one look at my sister, and she said, "What on earth? What have you got all over your face and down your coat and dress?" Mum looked at me. She said, "I thought I told you to look after her." I said, "I did, Mum, to the best of my ability." I said, "But if you want any answers," I said, "ask her." So she turned to my sister. She said, "Well, young lady, it's chocolate, Mum." Mum looked at me. "Where did she get chocolate from this time on a Sunday morning?" I just stood there shaking my head and pointed to my sister. So she said to my sister, "Where did you get chocolate from?" "Oh, soldiers gave it to me." "What soldiers?" "American soldiers, Mum." So my mum looked at me and I just shook my head. So she turned to Anne again and she said, "I thought I told you," she said, "to keep away from the American soldiers. We don't know what sort of people they are." So she said, "Well, they said because I'd made my first communion that I should get a present." And she said, "I don't remember eating chocolate before." And she'd eaten the whole bar of chocolate. She'd stuffed it into her mouth, and her mouth was so full that the chocolate was melting and running down her chin, and it had fallen on the neck of the white dress and down her coat. Her mother told her to take them off and to put the dress into soak, and she told her to go upstairs and stay in her bedroom. Mum was so angry. Mum said to me, "I thought I told you to look after her." I said, "Mum, I said, she's been going to school on her own for over 12 months now." I said, "And she couldn't see why I needed to be there to look after her, to go to church on Sunday morning."
How did the American soldiers behave in general in Dudley?
Well, we saw very little of them, because during the day they were out in the countryside doing... Well, in fact, after that... That weekend, they were moved out of the village altogether. There were no soldiers stationed in Dudley. They were all on the outskirts. But occasionally, you'd see a small group of them coming to the town. But they were only allowed in with a special pass because of the rioting.
Did you ever see any disturbances yourself?
In 1944, when the Black Americans were shipped over, they picked up these young lads from the deep south of America. Most of them had worked in the cotton fields, and they were treated like dirt over in America.
Is this the blacks?
Yes, yeah. And one lunchtime in 1944, Mum and my younger sisters had gone out for the day, and Mother hadn't had anything for my sandwiches for my lunch. So I walked down the town to a shop, Bowwaters, who did pot pies and special sausages. And as I got to the shop, I was surprised to be spoken to by a young black soldier. and he looked very young. And he said, "Excuse me, miss," he said, "can you help me?" I said, "Oh, what is it you want?" So he said, "Well, I'm looking for the soda fountain." I said, "Oh, we don't have soda fountains in Britain." I said, what exactly did you want?" So he said, "I've got a blister on my heel," he said, "and I need a dressing for it." So I said, "Oh, you need the chemist shop," I said, "which is across the road." I said, "I'll take you over there." So we went into the shop, and I needed one or two bits and pieces. And he started to ask for what he wanted. And he used all different names. Everything that he needed was different. So I said, "I think perhaps I'd better act as interpreter for you." So I told the girl behind the counter what it was he wanted. So, and I also showed him what money to give her. And he was quite pleased with that. So we walked back across the road. And I asked him his name. I can't remember that. But I do remember that he was 18 years old. And it was the first time that he'd been out of his hometown in the deep south. And we were standing talking on the pavement, and he was telling me about his family, his mum and dad, and his younger brothers and sisters. He was the eldest of the children, and he said that he sent all his pay back home for his family. He used to keep just a few coins for his needs, which were very few. He said, "We're not allowed to come shopping into the town," he said, "so I've got nothing to spend my money on." So I said, "What are you doing here in the town?" So he said, "We were out on a march," he said, "and my foot is so sore," he said, "and for anything like this," he said, "the doctors will not look at us black boys," he said, "they don't want to know." So he said, "I couldn't walk anymore." He said it wasn't just a blister by this time, it was rubbing a hole in his foot. So he'd sneaked out of camp, I think. Anyway, as we were talking, I spotted three white Americans coming along the pavement towards us. Two very tall, slim young men, one with exceptionally blonde hair, and the third one behind them, shorter appearance, with dark hair. And he looked very uncomfortable. Anyway, they came up to us, and the fair-haired one, he said to the coloured boy, he said, "Boy, what are you doing walking on the sidewalk? And what are you doing talking to a young white lady?" So I said, he was just asking for help and directions. I said he hadn't been in the town before and he needed something from the chemist. So he said, "I wasn't talking to you, miss," he said, "I'm asking him." So as the boy went to speak, they pushed him into the gutter. "That's the place for you, boy. And don't you dare raise your eyes and look at a white person, especially young white women. You keep your place." So I said to these two tall lads, I said, "Excuse me," I said, "but what part of America do you come from?" "Oh, no, we come from the deep south." So I said, "Oh." I said, I said, "For your information," I said, "this is not called a sidewalk, it is called a pavement." I said, "And in Britain," I said, "people of all colours are allowed to walk on the pavement, be their skin white, black, yellow, brown." I said, "But they're all allowed to walk on the pavement." He said, "Miss," he said, "your English laws don't apply to us Americans." I said, "Oh, don't they?" I said, not when you're guests of another country. I said, aren't you supposed to abide by the laws of the country that you're visiting? There's a special orders, miss, he said. We're under military rule, he said. We've got our own way of dealing with things. I said, oh, that's interesting. And as we were talking, the one at the back came up behind me. And all of a sudden, I felt his arms come right round me and hold me tight. I couldn't move my arms. And they pushed this lad into the gutter, but this time they pushed him over. And they kicked him from head to foot. And I went to say, what the hell do you think you're doing? And the one that was holding me, he whispered in my ear, he said, don't say another word and don't struggle. So they kicked this lad and they kicked him and they kicked him. And out of the corner of my eye from the right, I saw a policeman come along. So the American lad let me go. So he said, what's going on here? So I said, well, I said, I think you need to ask those two young white Americans. I said, what's happening? So he said, I saw that this other young man had his arms holding you tight. He said, did he hurt you, miss? And I said, no, he didn't. So he said, right. So he said to the other two, he said, well, do you want to tell me what's going on? Nothing to do with you whatsoever. He said, by the way, he said, who are you? So he said, I'm a British policeman, sir. And what rank are you? So he said, oh, we're just privates. So he said, oh. He said, and what you're doing is part of, you're allowed to do, are you? So he said, what we Americans get up to, sir, has nothing whatsoever to do with you, doesn't come under your jurisdiction. So the policeman said, well, he said, when I phone in a report in to my seniors, he said, I will have occasion to mention what I have seen. He said, and I've no doubt that you will be hearing from your commanding officers or whatever. So he said, well, sir, he said, if you put in a report and we are arrested, he said, we have got a lot of friends who think as we do, that the place for blacks is in the gutter. He said, and we will get our friends to come looking for you, and you will get the same treatment. So they went on their way, and the black lad, he eventually managed to pick himself up. And I went to speak to him, and he looked at me pleadingly and just shook his head, and he walked away. So I turned round, and the one that had been holding me, he disappeared, he'd run off. So I went into the Bow Waters, and as I turned to go into the shop, I noticed that all the staff had been standing by the door watching what had been going on. And by the time I got in, they were back behind the counter. And the policeman went into the shop, and he said, did any of you witness what was going on? So, as he spoke, he was sick on the floor. So the manager said, I think perhaps you'd better leave. So the policeman, he was shaking with shock and fear in his eyes. And he walked outside, and he was sick again. So I turned to the manager and I said, oh, well, are any of you gentlemen married? There were about half a dozen of them behind the counter. And I could see that all of them, apart from this one man, they were all underage. They were all under 18. So he said, one of them said, oh, only the manager's married. So I said, who's the manager? So this chap came forward, middle-aged man. He said, I'm married. I said, oh, good. I said, have you got any children? He said, yes. So I said, right. I said, you've just been watching something from your doorway. I said, now, how would you feel if that boy who has been kicked to death, I said, was your son? I don't have a son, I've only got daughters. I said, oh, but if he you? I said, but imagine, if that was your son, would you have stood by the door and watched those thugs kick your son almost to death? So he said, I'm not going to answer that. I said, no. I said, you're a coward. I said, you're all cowards. I said, you stood in that doorway and you watched every move and not one of you lifted a finger to try and save that boy. I said, I spoke up for him while he was lying in the gutter. I said, and I was held in a vice-like grip by one of them to stop me interfering. And he'd whispered to me, he said, don't say a word and don't move. He said, if you do, he said, they will give you the same treatment as they've given that boy. And they will do it because you are a nigger lover. So,
why do you think the policeman was sick?
Well, he'd been threatened. This white-haired lad, he told him that if he sent in a report and he was arrested for what had happened, he'd know who'd reported him, and he'd send his friends to look for him.
And this was in 1944?
Yeah.
Which month was this, do you think?
It was right about April time.
And which street was it in?
That was in the lower part of the High Street, in the marketplace. So I said to the chap in Bow Waters, I said, you are all cowards. I said, you call yourselves Englishmen, English gentlemen, and that you would fight for king and country. I said, but is this what you fight? What you would fight for? The Americans to virtually invade the country and carry on as though they were living back home in America and to be free to assault and abuse anybody they liked. So he said, I think perhaps you'd better leave. I said, oh, I don't worry. I said, I'm going. I said, before I go, I will tell you that you are a load of, what was the version I used? I said, you are cowards. I said, and if I were you, I'd be ashamed to call myself English gentleman. And as I went out of the door, he called out to me, nigger lover. So I turned back and I said, nigger lover? I said, no. I said, I'm not a nigger lover. I said, I respect human beings, whatever colour their skin. I said, and if a Chinese man was being attacked, or an Indian man was being attacked, I said, we are supposed to be civilised, we English people. I said, and we allow this to happen on our streets.
Were you speaking to the manager?
Yeah. I said, I'm not a nigger lover. I said, I don't like being people attacked. Been seeing people attacked. So I walked out of the shop and I walked around the corner to go to the hairdressers, but they were closed. And across the road, I saw an American soldier crouched down in a shop doorway. And his face was absolutely green. And I walked across to him and I said, oh, it's you. So I said, "Are you all right?" So he said, "No, no, I'm not." He said, "I'm glad it's you that's found me." He said, "I don't need to explain to you what's wrong with me." I said, "No, you don't."
Was this the man who'd been beaten up?
No, this was the one who'd held me, had his arms around me. So I said, "Did you go along with what those others were doing?" And he said, "No, miss, I didn't." He said that they are racist thugs. He said, "But the ringleader is the blonde-haired bloke." He said, "And I was bullied into coming into town with them." He said, "They got a hold over me. I think he owed them some money for card game or something. And they bullied him into going into town. And they'd come into town with the idea of beating somebody up." And he said, "And quite honestly, miss," he said, "if you'd said any more," he said, "they would have grabbed hold of you," he said, "and they would have kicked you and probably killed you." He said, "It was just as well you heeded my advice." I said, "Yes, thank you for that." I said, "You saved my life." And I said, "I'm now going to help you." I said, "What are you going to do?" So he said, "Well," he said, "I still feel sick." I said, "Yes, I know you do." He said, "But I don't want to go back to camp, and I don't want to go back into town in case they spot me." He said, "Because they'll do to me what they did to him." So I said, "Oh, don't worry." I said, "You don't need to go back into town." I said, "You've not been into Dudley before?" And he said, "No." I said, "Right." I said, "Well, go across the road. There was a baker's shop there." I said, "Well, go and get some bread or cakes, whatever they've got, whatever you fancy." Well, they'd got some bread rolls, and they'd got one or two cakes, which I think he bought. And then we went across to a fruit shop, and he bought a couple of pears and an apple, I think. I said, "Right." I said, "Now you've got food." I said, "This will see you through the rest of the day." I said, "Now, if you go down this road, you turn right and first left, it will take you out onto Priory Road. If you go down Priory Road," it was on a slope of a hill, "but if you go down Priory Road, and near the bottom, just before the big roundabout," I said, "if you look to your right, you'll see a little park." I said, "There's a notice there, a Priory Park." I said, "It's the ruins of an old priory, little park area around the corner." I said, "You go in there." I said, "And I think I can safely say that they won't find you." So he thanked me. I said, "And you make sure when you get back to camp," I said, "that you keep out of the way of those two." I said, "They are dangerous." And he said, "Yes, they are, miss." He said, they're known in the camp." He said, "The officers know them. They've got quite a reputation, apparently." So I said, "Well, good luck." And I walked off, and I had to get back to work. And I got in, and the boss said, "You're laid back, Teresa." So I said, "Yes, I'm sorry about this." I said, "I got caught up in a crowd. There was an incident down by the marketplace," I said, "and I got caught up with it," I said, "and I couldn't get away." So he accepted my explanation. And then about 5 o'clock, I said to him,